Three, two, one. Good afternoon, Carlos.
Hello.
What's going on?
Not much. How are you?
I'm great. I'm having a great day.
Cool.
I got into this podcasting, and then all of a sudden, I like have to like find people to talk to. I'm like, come on, anybody.
Hey, man. I love it.
I just did a podcast with this lady, and I'm like, yeah, I'll have you back on. You know, maybe in like one. Two
hours,
3 days. It's not that bad, but I said, you know, maybe, what's the appropriate length of time where you have them back? A month?
Good question.
We'll have to find out, but I definitely seeded the idea in her mind of coming back. She's like, oh, I'd love to.
That's awesome. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, buddy. So a cool thing, you know, I had you on for the Urban Float. And then I found out that you like have all sorts of stuff you've been doing, which is interesting stuff like IBM. Not as interested in that. But the GoPro.
Right.
I'm a big fan of GoPro.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of how GoPro makes it look on the commercials.
Yeah.
But I have never been able to achieve that look yet. Actually, I shouldn't say that. The new GoPro, and I told you this off recording, but I love that new GoPro.
Yeah,
that thing is awesome. Maybe I struggle a little bit with color, and I've actually been learning a little bit because I do a lot of the time lapse, and I find if for some reason it only shoots time lapse in the fisheye,
right?
But if I like, sometimes I'll arrange it so the bottom of the horizon is right at the bottom, mm-hmm. and the fisheye affects it to a point where it's at the color. I struggle with color, but what I've learned is I actually bring a little of the horizon down so that it's not like the part that the motion part is mm-hmm. less fisheyed mm-hmm. and I'm getting a little bit better results, but that's just trial and error.
That's awesome.
But it's a wonderful little camera.
Isn't it crazy? That's yeah. what you can get out of that little thing.
So did you invent it?
Yeah.
I'm nice.
The inventor. Yeah. You know,
well, I saw that in your bio on your Facebook. I'm like, look at this guy. He's involved with the GoPro. And I've seen some, you know, I think, who's the owner of GoPro?
The founder is Nick Woodman.
The founder, mm-hmm. Nick Woodman.
Yep.
I've seen him on a couple shows, and, mm-hmm. you know, I wonder if he'd come do the podcast. are you still friends with Nick?
You know, his assistant, you
yeah.
know, I have her information, and I reach out to her occasionally, and I'll ask her to print out an email and put it on his desk.
Is he, when you worked there, were you, I mean, so let's just start. So you started working at GoPro around right. in the beginning.
Yeah, not in the very, very beginning. Actually, right after they IPO'd in, 2015, I believe they IPO'd. I could be wrong on that one. I'm pretty sure it was 2015. I think I joined 6 months later.
Okay.
So I was at the end.
Well, really. The early GoPro story is pretty funny because it.
Yeah, I mean, I have insight there because one of my closest friends, he was there. I typically call him a co-founder, he was the very first employee of GoPro. He's one of my closest friends. We lived in Costa Rica together.
Nice.
In the 90s. He was a groomsman in my wedding, when we moved back from Costa Rica in 2008, a couple of years later, he kind of called me. He was just like, hey, man, my college roommate, my college buddy has this thing. I think it's going to take off, man. I think I'm going to join him. It's a disposable camera that you strap on a wrist and you take surf and you take pictures of your bros. What do you think?
It was disposable?
The original GoPro is a disposable camera, a disposable waterproof camera.
Okay.
And it was actually, the concept back then was the patent on the wrist strap.
Right.
It wasn't about the camera.
Right. I saw that.
So
that's cool.
And I'm like, all right, Neil, go for it, man. No, I ain't going to buy that shit. I was like, go for it. And he was
it's never happening.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, and I was a surfer, and I am a surfer, and he sent me a bunch, like, in the mail, and my buddy, my local friend here, and I went to Puerto Rico. I think that winter we took a bunch with us and took some. I actually have a couple of photos from that trip on my Facebook profile, and yeah, I just kind of tracked him and kept in touch with him, and I thought about, you know, it would have to take my wife and I to move out to California at that time in the early days. So mm-hmm. I had thought about it, and Neil put that out there for me. You know, I was like, hey, man, you know, work with me on this. But I was, you know, I was 20 something and I didn't like, man, you know.
I'm Did you have kids yet?
No, not yet. So, they were just, Charlie was just born, I believe, when they started doing their uphill climb. But Neil, they just put their head to the grindstone. It wasn't always smooth for them. It was towards the Hero 3-4 period is where they really just took off to the moon. You know, their early film Hero, the disposable camera.
Yeah.
And iterations after that, the digital camera side.
Was it more in the beginning of a case that held the camera and a strap?
It was all about the, from what I remember, it was about the patent on the wrist strap.
Okay.
And you can take that housing and the disposable camera and just, you know.
Because the first initial one was pretty big.
It was huge.
Yeah, it was huge.
It was a big, you know, 2007.
Yeah.
You know, so digital cameras weren't even available.
Isn't that weird that 2007 was a long time ago?
I know.
I feel like we were just all cringe in the corner over Y2K.
right.
And that was almost 20 years ago now.
Yeah. So I just tracked with, I mean, we kept in touch. We hung out and we would go on surf trips together. And he would travel the world. Literally, it was just him and Nick. And they would do these trade shows for surf shops and slowly gain traction. And when they entered the digital media technology world, that's when things started to take off. And then when they entered the mainstream retail is when it really took off, when they entered into, you know, big box, what they call big box retail, like Walmart and Target and Best Buy was at the time our number one reseller of GoPro. And that's what happened. And they just took off like wildfire. And then in 2015 or 14, I was just like, you know, like, Neil, maybe I'd want to come finally work with you.
You felt it was safe enough?
Yeah, pretty much. And I threw it out there. And actually, I have to give credit to my boss at IBM, who at the time, a really good friend of mine still today, he's retired. He was actually the one. I was really doing well at IBM. I was one of the team's top, you know, sales people at the time. And, you know, I was, you know, we had a really good team. I enjoyed my time there. And Rich was like, Carlos, what are you doing here at IBM? You're one of your best friends is like number two at GoPro.
Yeah.
Go over there and work. And it didn't even dawn on me, you know? So I threw an email over, or I threw a text or a call. I said, Neil, you think I can get on your team? He's like, yeah, send me your resume. I'll see what I can do. You know, and only he didn't really get me a job there. He just put my resume. At the time, the company was pretty big at that time.
Mm-hmm.
He put my resume to a couple of the sales leaders there. And I actually interviewed traditionally, flew out there, and didn't do any name dropping. I was just like, oh, I know Neil Dana, you know,
right.
Nick Woodman. You know, I just tried to get it on my own merit. And
Neil Dana.
right. And I had a really, you know, the hiring manager, my manager there, she was really cool. And they brought me on, and obviously I had since I had history with Neil and I knew the brand pretty well. They took a risk with me, and coming from corporate, you know, business to business, you know, corporate sales to retail consumer sales was a big jump for me. And it was a super fun experience.
Maybe they brought you over for some maturity, because I can see, I can imagine the atmosphere at GoPro compared to the atmosphere at IBM.
Definitely a dynamic there.
Morning, Carlos.
Right. Well, I think the challenge there. So I did that for 2 years, and I traveled the world for them. It was amazing. You know, I was in Brazil, Japan, China. More than a few times.
Was it one of those, like, everywhere we go, make sure you're GoProing?
Yes. Actually, really cool. While I was there, they implemented every Thursday from 1 to 4, get out of your office and do something fun and GoPro it.
Nice.
That was really, really cool that they did that, you know, wherever you were, whether you worked from home. And I, of course, I'm East Coast based, so I wasn't as good at that because I worked from home. So, but the folks, the corporate office was pretty, the campus was pretty large. So at 1 to 4, people would go to the movies, bring their GoPro, or they would go to the skate park.
You can't take your movie to, you can't take GoPro to the movies. That's a law.
Or they didn't, like, Nick didn't, like, say,
hey, I GoPro'd the movie.
But, like, they would, like, literally go anywhere. And he said, just go ahead, take Thursday afternoon, 3 hours, and go have fun. If you can GoPro it, that would be great. If not, go have fun. Like, that was a really cool perk, I thought.
Well, that's the reason you open your own business, because you literally cannot work for somebody else after that kind of job.
Well, you know, it's been an epic ride.
And I've watched, you know, you sent me a link to when you and your son went to, I think it was Pearl Jam, mm-hmm. up at Fenway,
mm-hmm.
and used the GoPro.
Sure.
And what a great little video.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that stuff.
I ate, drank, breathed, swam in GoPro when I was there. I was all about the brand. I was all branded out.
Now,
all
do
the
you
time.
Find your? Do you think you're an artsy guy or more of a technical guy? Like,
I think
was that a stretch for you to like? I'll film everything. I mean, mm-hmm. that's just kind of what I'm known for. Not professionally, but you know,
sure.
I love that stuff. Right. Some people have to force, oh, let me take a picture. Oh, so, I mean, was that an easy transition for you? Or
so, you know, because of my connections with GoPro, and I always got cameras in the mail from Neil. He always sent stuff over Christmas time. And I was a technologist from IBM. Right. So the technology stuff kind of came easy to me. And I felt content creation came somewhat easy to me. And I actually like producing film and video. The creativity part, I wouldn't say I'm a natural at, but mm-hmm. I think I learned that while I was at GoPro, being in the media department and walking through the halls there and making some. Even today, I still have some amazing friends that still work there, and some who don't work there anymore, who are great content creators and filmmakers.
Well, it's funny because you know there's all sorts of products out there, and every once in a while you'll come across a product that really makes, all of a sudden you start going, like the ideas just start pouring out. Like, yeah. I could do some stuff with this thing. Mm-hmm. And whether that's your genre or not, but that's the kind of thing, that's what I've always felt about GoPro. It's like, I'm going to go get in the ocean with this thing. Like, yeah. I haven't been in the ocean all year, but I'm going to take this thing out there. I actually made maybe it was a Hero 3 or 4 or something, but I made a short film of body surfing in Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the great thing about GoPro is they go underwater. Sure. The bad thing about Lewis is that you go underwater and there's nothing to see. It's just murky.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but I did it and it was great.
Most of my YouTube channel is GoPro. Definitely, you know, from me surfing and going on surf trips to music. I've helped some of the local musicians with some of the GoPros that I've had, and they're going to, you know, they use them. I'm still a huge fan of the company, and you know, I still root for them all the time. You know, the company's a bit different than it is now than it was back when I was there. You know, it had this huge, it was a huge media department back then into entertainment. And that part of the company no longer exists. If it exists, it's probably 2 or 3 people.
Mom or dad came home.
Right.
Settle down, everybody.
Right. Get this riffraff out of here.
That Thursday, 3 hour Thursday shit, that's gone. We're not doing that anymore.
Right. Kind of like that, you know.
But you had to kind of go through that to get to that point,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the ramp up was super quick for Nick. And he made some, I guess, looking back on it, he made some risky investments. And he totally admits to that, you know, on some of the media interviews that didn't pan out for him, pan out for the company. But he had amazing talent that worked there. Like Xander Lurie from CBS Sports was a celebrity hire, ran the entertainment division. He's now the CEO of SurveyMonkey, and I'm friends, you know, I'm acquaintances. I consider him a friend as well. Bill McCullough, HBO Films, and he's also, I think, Bill, Xander, and Ocean McAdams are all Emmy Award winner producers, and they all worked at GoPro. I mean, I'm sitting there with meetings with these guys. It's really, really cool hearing them talk and riff about filmmaking and content creation, and being a part of that world was really cool. Like, just seeing, you know, especially just with the powerhouses that you see on, like, TV and stuff, and what the films that they've produced. So I thought it was a really cool opportunity for GoPro to enter the professional world of filmmaking, and but you know, they are back to their consumer roots, retail roots, and just trying to sell cameras as opposed to just, you know.
Well, whatever they did, I thought it was perfect because it made me feel like I could make a pretty awesome movie.
Yes.
Now, the me doing that was a little different.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I definitely like about GoPro is they continue to improve. You know, mm-hmm. they've taken something that you're like, oh, this is pretty freaking awesome. And then the next one comes out and you're like, oh, well, that's pretty freaking mm-hmm. awesome. Mm-hmm. And this latest camera, and I will, you know, and this has nothing, you know, this is no mark on you or anybody there, but I will say that they lost me a little bit in the 5 and the 6 and stuff because it's just, you know, until...
It wasn't a huge jump is what you're saying.
Well, it wasn't a huge jump, but the GoPro that they have now...
7.
Is awesome. And I'll tell you why. You can see what you've shot. That mm-hmm. used to always drive me crazy because it was kind of a crapshoot. You'd film a lot of stuff, never quite sure what you got until you got home and downloaded it. Mm-hmm. But now you can actually, has a screen on it. And I don't know if that's new just to the 7.
No, 4.
The 4 had it too?
Four had a screen.
Okay, mm-hmm. well, I didn't have the 4. But now that I got the 7, I love that. Mm-hmm. And I also love that it doesn't have to be inside a sealed case anymore. Right. Which I thought was...
That stopped at 5 as well.
Which was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite thing to do, and I used to love doing it with my old... Like, I'm an iPhone guy, and every time I would get a new iPhone until my kids got old enough to start taking them from me, was I would use them as, like, time-lapse cameras. Mm-hmm. Because there is... Besides GoPro, there's really nothing... That mm-hmm. does time lapse, and mm-hmm. I for some reason have this fascination with time lapse. I just mm-hmm. I think it's That's really cool.
Yeah,
and yeah. you know, people say, "Oh my God, you're such a professional," and I go, "No, I just got up at 5:30 and stuck a camera in the yard." I mean, it's right. I always say the best shot. You, first of all, you have to be there for it, and then that's really it. You have to be there for the shot.
Yeah, but but your thought on creating that content, you know, that's creativity. That's you thinking of something creative to do and documenting it. And that's what GoPro was all about. They call it the virtuous cycle. You know, it's you creating something easily, sharing it with friends, and those friends buying more GoPros. And they called that the virtuous cycle, you know, and that's, it was about sharing your life and getting people stoked about it and distracting people from their everyday struggles and their negativity and negative news and stuff. And that's really what Nick really wanted to do for the company. And I think he was really successful at it. Now it's really, you know, so much about action sports and, you know, they have such a huge footprint in alternative sports and activities that, you know, I think with someone like you and I who can do time lapse and, put their GoPro on their dog for a walk, and
yeah.
so it's expanding and it's getting better. And
well, it allows the average Joe to become a little bit more than the average Joe.
Yeah, you're doing 4K content, you know, and average Joe, and within seconds share it with the world.
Well, and then that's my second thing. I used to have this a Sony. I don't remember what the exact camera was, but it was just a digital camera, but it was a mirror camera, so mm-hmm. it was a little of both. But the nice thing is that Sony had created a platform that allowed me to push a button, it connected to my phone, it downloaded all the pictures from the camera right to my phone without being a, you know,
mm-hmm.
a tech guy.
Mm-hmm.
It was very easy,
mm-hmm.
and I love that, and I still have that Sony camera. I bought, you know, a Nikon. I've had some other big mm-hmm. cameras that allow you to do that, but it's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you almost have to download a secret special app. It's really annoying.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, so much I don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But Sony did a great job with it. And then now this, and I don't know how it was with the previous few cameras before the 7, but I can tell you that the 7, I just hit the button and it connects. It hit join. It brings it all up, and it's just that easy.
Isn't it awesome?
Yeah, and that's, you know, I always say, you know, I made a social media app, and I'm like, you know, these one little steps that we've built in here that are really annoying, that shuts people off. I mean, mm-hmm. they're done. They're like, one extra step, and I lost
right.
interest.
Right.
So GoPro did a great job. Yeah, you can fly off a mountain in a parachute and film right. it and look great, but how annoying is it to upload? Now, if that's your career, you're mm-hmm. going to take the time. But for a guy like me that just wants to upload something fun, that's nice. So they've not only did a great job with being able to film stuff in 4K and all the stuff, but
yep.
uploading it is really, and I think you could probably just share it as you do it too.
Yeah, it's all about content sharing and sharing your lifestyle and life with others, and they believe you have a subscription. They offer a subscription service for your content. They even offer like, you know, pretty big cash rewards for, you know, killer videos, mm-hmm. you know, and killer edits, you know. So, and their mobile app is pretty cool. You can create a movie with music.
Yep.
You know, and so I'm going to be using it at Urban Float for sure. I haven't done much of it yet, but I'm going to do a time lapse and do all that cool stuff with the GoPros that I have. And yeah, and they're actually running a pretty good special as well in terms of deals. I think any GoPro, actually any digital camera you send to them, they'll give you up to $100 off a Hero 7.
Wow.
Anything, any camera, whether it's working or not, you send it into them. They'll give you a voucher for $100 off.
Wow.
I think that's still going on. And I believe it's their trade up program. They always do that to try to
unload. We'll call the guy and we'll make sure he makes those deals happen, right?
I'm pretty sure it's still happening.
We'll email his assistant.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know what? And that's great because the GoPro, you know, besides, you know, trying to figure out different ways to film and basically can replace a digital camera by itself.
Right.
And
right.
Another thing that's cool, and I think this was, I thought was a great idea, and I don't know, I'm only speaking for the 7 because I didn't, first of all, I couldn't afford to buy every camera, but I finally did the 7. But, you know, like my kids, your kids, you know, kids nowadays, they all want YouTube channels.
Yes.
You know, and they all want to take this, they all want to capture stuff, and GoPro does this thing where when you're filming, it has like this red line that goes around the square of the screen, which is a 30-second, you know, you can set it up for 10, 15, 30-second mm-hmm. recording. Mm-hmm. And that little red line goes around, and so you can see kind of when it's about to finish. Now, if I had one suggestion,
sure, I'll pass it on.
It'd be nice if you, whoever's filming themselves, could see that. Now, if I'm standing, like, in front of, behind the camera, and I go, I can watch it, but it's hard to see if you were just filming a little clip.
Mm.
So maybe, I don't know.
Well, you know, they have a customer feedback experience program that it's free. I get you, send you the link. You can join it and be offer that feedback directly into their technical.
It may already do it. I just haven't figured out. I'm not exactly too excited about my kids making YouTube channels yet. Mm-hmm. Because you know who's going to be doing all the editing.
Right, you. Yeah, and I did the same thing.
Vicariously living through my kids.
right. My daughter's big into it. My son's big into it as well.
Do they have a channel?
Yeah. They used to put up a lot of content on Casas Kids HD, but not so much anymore. As they're getting older, you know, it's not as interesting. It takes a lot of work.
It does take a lot of work.
Yeah.
I had a vlog for a while, which I did a lot of drone stuff, and mm-hmm. You know, set up time lapses and fly the drone and then mm-hmm. do sunrises and sunsets and mm-hmm. I'd blend it all in. And then, you mm-hmm. know, after
it takes a lot of work.
Well, it takes a lot of work, but I found myself, I got into this same rhythm, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and then it became like predictable.
Right.
And I was
right.
I was over it. And then, you know, you mentioned, you know, the company has made some good and bad choices. The drone business was a little shaky.
They were late. Bottom line is they were late, and they could have entered the market a year or two prior to their launch of their drone.
Yeah, well, their drone, I like the idea because actually their drone, the camera went in and slid in, and you could take the camera out on the gimbal. And it was mm-hmm. It was like almost like a three-step package. You got the drone, you had a camera, and then you had a gimbal. And then you could take the gimbal and slide it into the drone, and then that became the camera, which was a great idea. I actually feel like the drone business is going to be struggling anyway.
Yeah, because it's going to get regulated.
Well, it's already regulated. And, you know, anytime you offer somebody the ability to fly around, they're going to abuse it.
Right.
And they have.
Right.
So now, like, the drone that's right above me, this Altel drone, that thing, I shot a lot of my first vlogs with that thing, and I could literally go from...
Is that a DJ? What is that one?
That one's an Altel.
Okay.
That one over there is a DJI. Mm-hmm. I lost my Mavic Pro in an oak tree.
Oh. Wow.
That thing was sweet. But
yeah, I have a Karma. Yeah, I have a GoPro Karma.
Do you?
Yeah, yeah. It's big. I think it's massive.
Well, but now they keep uploading different things to the software. So now, mm-hmm. like I used to be able to fly the thing all over the place. Mm-hmm. And now I just had to, I had to send it back because something broke. And then they fixed it. And I flew it. And I literally got over the pond and it lost connection.
Oh, right.
So they're limiting how far they can fly without. Right. And I actually, this was kind of funny. I actually went and took my drone test to get my drone license.
Cool.
And failed.
You have to study for it.
I did. I studied. I actually went to a course at Dell Tech.
For commercial flying?
Yeah, to get my commercial drone license.
So how does that work? You get a commercial license and now you can just go ahead and fly over Route 1 now? Or what's the...
No, you can't. Well, and so this is no disrespect to the idea or, you know, starting to try to make some regulations or to educate people. But what it really turned out to be was... You know, if I wanted to take my drone and fly it from here to Oklahoma City, I would have to have a flight plan. I'd have to learn about class airspace, you know, where I can go, where I can't. It's almost like if I was going to take my plane and fly it to Oklahoma, I would have to have the same kind of flight plan. And that's the kind of what...
That's pretty far for a drone.
Well, and I'm exaggerating, obviously. I'm exaggerating. But the point was is
you
that...
You need a flight plan?
It didn't... Well, if I let's say I'm going to go do some drone shooting, and I want to do it over, you know, up in Dover. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a big Air Force base up there, mm-hmm. so then I'm going to have to ask for clearance, and then it's not easy. It just isn't a free for all once you get your pilot's license.
Okay.
And
so, what does it enable you to do then? So what does it what get? What's the advantage of having your pilot's license for
create revenue?
Okay.
So if I go up and I take a picture of a house and a real estate agent uses it and that picture helps him sell that house, that's creating revenue. Mm-hmm. You can shuck and jive all you want on different ways. Oh, I'm not doing this for money. But if someone's making money on your picture,
right.
revenue is being created.
Right.
And that's the problem. Mm-hmm. So,
having your commercial license actually gives you the ability to, you know, I get it. So to have a company.
Do you know Rob Waters?
Rob Waters.
He has W Films.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know him personally. I know W Films, though.
You should have... He'd be a great guy to have come over and do, like, you know, a short video, a fun mm-hmm. video. He mm-hmm. can do some clever stuff, maybe for even for Urban Float.
Oh, cool.
He does... Right. He's a great... He's done... We've made several videos for the salon. We did one called... I had a shampoo that was... It was like a cleansing conditioner, so it didn't have any bubbles. So we did a video called "Someone Stole the Bubble Bandit." Mm. Someone had stole all the bubbles out of the town, and it was a fun video. We've done a few of them, but he's a great guy. Him and I took the class together.
Oh.
He passed. I failed. I had a 68 out of 70, and I could have retaken the test. But what I learned in the whole process is this isn't going to help me because I'm not going to start a drone business.
68 out of 70. That's a pretty good score.
Right.
You had to be 70 out of 70?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, you
gosh.
Had to be 70 out of 100.
Oh. I thought, yeah, okay, so you got 60 out of 100. Sorry.
Well, you got to point that out. Exactly. Okay. And I could have taken it over, but it's like one of those, oh, we're not going to tell you what you missed. You just need to study everything over again.
Oh, okay.
And I was annoyed. And I'm not starting a drone business. I thought, well, if I got my license, maybe I could...
Monetize your content.
But... Right. It's not happening. So I didn't even bother, and I'm fine with it. And since I've been out flying my drone, since I've realized I can't really even do the stuff that I was even doing anymore because the apps that they, you know, DJI or Naltel, you know, they're being put to the fire because, you know, these people are flying these drones over airlines and mm-hmm. airports. And mm-hmm. so it's going to be that's got some figuring out.
Like everybody's got a drone right now, and everybody's creating content. You see TJ Redifer's. You know, you videos from Dewey all the time, and I on Facebook, and I'm like, wow, he's going right over all of Dewey with that thing.
Well, and that's the thing, you're not really supposed to fly over people,
yeah,
without a permission, you know, a request. So,
man, I when I first got my GoPro Karma, I took it to the Outer Banks, and we had our beach house. We went to the beach house as a family house with other families. Man, I think it goes like 30 miles an hour.
Yeah,
that thing flies. They're just going through over the ocean.
Yeah,
with it, that was awesome.
Oh, I did 142 videos.
Oh my gosh,
of flying over. I did I flew down the Bay Bridge. No, the Inlet Bridge down the middle of it.
Oh yeah?
Probably illegal.
Oh, it totally is.
I'll never admit to it though. Again.
Right.
But
right.
I had a lot of great I did this one flying over Gordon's Pond. It was the sun was just coming up. It was glassy. the whole pond was glassy, and I flew that drone, and it looked like an island floating in the water with the sun and everything in the reflection. It was great. But I also put in,
do you have a YouTube video? Can I check it out?
Yeah, it's called Can I Just Say It?
Can I Just Say It?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can.
Okay.
That's cool. Just, yeah, it was called Can I Just Say It? And yeah, it was fun. That's awesome. Did a lot of stuff, but I can't, there's nowhere else to fly.
Right.
So I'm.
Right. No, you can't get busted by the state park rangers. I actually got busted by the state park rangers I was working on a project for the state parks, actually. And I took my GoPro Karma, and I wanted to do some filming of Tower Road so I can part of my presentation to the state parks. The guy came speeding in. You know, apparently one of the patrons there reported me, and next thing you know, comes in like
bad out of hell,
like Magnum PI yes. in his Bronco or his Explorer, and he said, "You can't do that." I'm like, "Hey, I'm doing a project for your boss's boss's boss, you know, and I'm just trying to get some content for my presentation." Oh, okay. And he left me alone. It's totally fine. But usually they drop it fine on you. Big time. Oh, yeah.
I flew a lot over the state park and never.
Good. I think you're doing it right by sunrise. sunrise is probably the best.
Well, and people go, "Oh, do you fly over all the girls?" And I'm like, dude, I mean, really? It's not necessary. I'm less concerned about flying over girls. I like flying over like marsh and stuff that people don't see.
Right.
So, but I had a lot of fun with it. I flew it up. It was funny. A few years back, I flew it for 4th of July, but I took off from over by where Shall We Bounce used to be, in that kind of that little forgotten area over there. And flew it, but I didn't go into the fireworks, but I filmed it all. It was great. And then last year we went, and I looked in the sky, and you could see about 8 drones.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just getting worse.
Yeah, I see them in Dewey at night and Rehoboth at night. Now, I guess no one really, I guess they're not really super enforcing it, it's just everybody's doing it now.
Yeah, and I don't even know what the ticket would be. I don't know.
Who knows?
They have to start posting no drones or something.
Probably going to come, don't you think?
Well, probably. But the other thing is you could be in a place that you can fly drones and then fly a drone into an area that's not really. But if you're not standing in it.
Right.
And this is all pretty much clear airspace here.
Yeah?
Well, a little bit of stuff right here by this little airport.
Mm.
And there's stuff by the Salisbury Airport.
Right.
And there's a little bit by Georgetown. But all on the beach, it's all free space.
Yeah. Yep. GoPro, they had a good shot at it until like their first 70 fell out of the sky.
Oh, did they fall out of the sky?
Yeah. The first initial batch of GoPros that were bought, I think, was it 70 of them? Yeah, it was like 70 of them, maybe 100 of them. The battery would disengage and disconnect and
just fall. That didn't actually happen to mine, but something similar. Remember that every once in a while they'll have crop dusting planes?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a guy out crop dusting, and there's that, who's the famous photographer around here that has all the books?
Oh, Thomas something. I can't remember his name. But
anyway, he has a great picture, and it's from a helicopter of a crop duster plane that's going over the crops, but the spray is like spinning off the wingtips. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get that. That shot.
Yeah.
So off the drone went, and it was about 2 fields away. And I got there, and I was filming it, and I go,
filming him crop dusting?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Really?
And I'm like, just a little more, just a little closer. And it's like battery low. And I'm like, just a little more. And then I turned around, and it died about 500 yards from my house.
Oh.
But the thing just stopped and said, and it landed on top of a tree.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And I took another that, so I got that drone, and I flew it up there to see if I could see the drone.
Mm-hmm.
But the fisheyeing of the lens was so, I mean, I'm clearly above the tree, but when I look through the camera, I'm like in the leaves. I'm right. Like, oh my God, I'm not losing another drone.
So I dropped a grappling hook and grab it. Were you?
I don't know what I was trying to do. I just wanted some closure. I just wanted to say goodbye. Bye through the screen. I loved you.
It'd be cool for one drone to save another.
That was a great drone, the Mavic Pro.
Yeah.
Awesome drone.
I got a really good friend that has he makes money creating drone videos for commercial real estate and golf courses and stuff in Miami, Jason Reuter, and he's a really good guy, and he's gotten really, really good at it. I'll get you in contact with him because he is one guy that's got a crazy amount of drones, and he's always posting videos, and he's doing pretty well with it, actually.
I'd be interested to hear his opinion on the changes in the last year and a half, because I took my drone up to even like Pfeiffer's Orchard, and I was going to fly it over the orchard, and it wouldn't even fly. It went up and would go like so slow because that in the app. The app's connected to the drone, and if you're in a restricted space, it tells that it won't.
Don't go anywhere.
Nope.
Wow.
So it'll only get worse.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You'll be able to just go up and down.
I used to. You watch Casey Neistat?
Mm-mm.
You remember, he's a vlogger up in New York City. I think he's moving to California. But
he does like the drone reviews.
He reviews whatever, right? You know, right. Yeah, skateboards. I think I know who it is. Yeah, he's the guy that rides a boosted board.
Yep, yep.
He's
I know who that is now.
I really liked Casey. Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I saw that.
I really liked watching him. I'm not as big a fan of his anymore because I feel like it's he's all about the money now, which is fine if you got that kind of an audience.
He does pretty well. He's got millions of followers. You know,
yeah, and so. He's good, and he does a lot of cool editing and time lapse, and that's kind of what inspired me to get into it. I did the piss poor version of a Casey Neistat vlog, but it was what I had.
Hey. It's you know, that stuff is, YouTube has taken over the world, man.
YouTube has taken over the world.
They have taken over. I mean, holy crap. Everybody's like creating channels, and it's all about, number of viewers or followers. I remember when I was at GoPro, I had a meeting with the WWE and in their media YouTube department. And at the time, it was like 2016, WWE had the number one channel on YouTube.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, Kids React, that channel, they do all the kids stuff, and they react on like funny food and stuff. Met those guys that came by our booth at NAB. So I got to meet a lot of like super high level like YouTube channel or content creators. And yeah, I'm like, wow, I kind of left that conference, and I was just like, man, I didn't realize.
Well, and it's weird because.
And now I use GoPro.
Well, and the weird thing is that our kids, your kids, my kids, they all want to make a YouTube channel because they want to be, a high number of likes. And it's almost weird to push somebody towards that because it's so fake. It's so phony.
Yeah.
You know, oh my God, I got this many likes. This makes me this kind of person. And then all of a sudden, if you don't get likes, then it all of a sudden makes you a different kind. It's tough, but it's where we're headed.
Well, think about it, though. I mean, the famous actors, even from the early days, they were measured by popularity.
Right.
So this is just another way of popularizing yourself, right? It's a different medium of doing that. So to me, it's no different than the Tom Cruises and the Ben Afflecks of the world. They just have a massive audience, and they may not. They don't need they don't need YouTube per se. But their popularity is always driven their celebrity status.
Well, and I really get. I hesitate when it comes to money is happiness. I mean, it's a tough. I remember as a kid, my mom, and I've said this before, and she was always about, to make big bucks. You need to make the big bucks, like that's happiness. And then as a kid, you're like, I'm going to be a millionaire. Now it's a billionaire, I guess, is what they're all shooting for. But, and then when you don't achieve it, you're like, well, I must not be happy.
Right.
And, and I guess you only address this or think about things like this as we get older, as we become like I'm 50 and I'm like, well, I need to redefine happiness because I'm not going to be a millionaire. And even if I did, I think I would probably be unhappy.
Right.
Because, you know, you give me a dollar, I want two.
Right.
Give me two, I want four.
I think as we get older, we realize we don't need as much.
Right.
You know, and it doesn't define, what we have doesn't define, or what we can afford to buy doesn't define who we are.
Right.
What we're are we a contributing human of the world? You don't have to have $1 million to do that. You know, so I think it's, yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right on point. I think you learn that innately as you get older.
Well, but you, as a father, you know, I always say I'm not a father, I'm a guide. You know, I'm here to try to guide mm-hmm. you, not, you know, father you, because I don't right. even know what that means. I just want to, you know, as a father, I want to try to steer you from some of the pitfalls that I went through. But if I hadn't gone through some of those, it wouldn't make me the person that I am today.
Right.
So it's tough. You can't just make your kid go on the path of least resistance mm-hmm. with the most success, because you're not creating character.
Right.
And
right, right.
I'm worried that, you know, like YouTube videos, and my daughter, Teresa, she wants to be a YouTuber.
Uh-huh.
She just wants to like play with slime and have me videotape it all day. Right. And I'm like,
that's a phase. It'll go away. My daughter did the same exact thing. And we did it for a while. It was fun. And
but they sit there and watch videos of kids opening slime all day. And they just, my one son watches a guy just open Pokemon cards.
Yeah. They'll grow out of all that. My kids did the same thing. It's a short phase of it. And the exact same thing. My kids, was it EvanTube? You know, the younger Asian kid who made millions of dollars reviewing products from his father put him in front of a camera. Oh, I'm going to check out this water bottle. And he's just a kid checking out a water bottle. And next thing you know, it's got a million followers. And,
yes.
You know, so, you know, it's in kids, you know.
What does it say? Is it say something about the future of kids doing videos, or does it say something about how easily we become entertained?
Right. I mean,
there's a guy. And this is what kind of burned me out on Casey. He had this guy on, and this guy will sit and he'll count to 100,000 and film it. And he goes, you know, 1, 2, 3. And he's filming himself, and he's got millions of viewers. I'm like, what the really? 9, 10. I mean, it is fascinating. I don't think I could sit there and quietly count to 100,000, but he did it.
199,900.
But then what he does is he has so many viewers, he makes so much money. Now he gives like $1 million away.
Mm-hmm.
And just giving $1 million away creates millions of views.
Right.
So it's like, it's insane. It's insane. But you're right. YouTube is, I watch TV with my wife, and then when we go to bed, I watch YouTube in the bed.
Right, right, right.
Because
they got the whole YouTube Red now at TV.
So yeah.
That's pretty cool. You know, I haven't tried it yet, but new Karate Kid came back out. You know, I don't know if you know, they rebooted Karate Kid with Daniel LaRusso and Johnny.
Oh, really? You
know, so they came back and reunited, and they did a whole, like, they're making season 3. It was a hit.
Oh, and this is just a YouTube.
It's just a YouTube-only series.
I have noticed they have some, I've noticed that. They have a few series, and I haven't quite.
And they let you watch the first couple of episodes for free, and then they hit you up with the subscribe now.
They did a Halo show. I think that was one of the first things that they created.
Xbox Halo game?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
But it was a series, and it was good.
Right.
And a friend of mine who's an actor, his son was just auditioned for a part in the movie. He didn't get the role, so I can say it now. But he's like 6'8". I'm like, that would be the perfect role. Somebody in a Halo uniform.
Right. 6'8". Yeah, yeah. No kidding. That's pretty intimidating.
Well, and you know, because I still have Xfinity.
Mm-hmm.
And I kicked Xfinity for a while, and they begged me to come back, and I did for a reasonable price, but I'm getting up to that. It's creeping up again.
Of course.
And
of course.
I'm thinking about, you know, maybe kicking them again.
Yeah.
Because there's so much stuff to watch.
It is. You know, now you have to have like the right download speeds and stuff.
Do you like TV?
I was huge into Game of Thrones. Like, I watch series. I don't watch a lot of like TV. I watch sports. I'm a sports nut for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not a huge. I like series. Like I've been watching.
Did you watch Chernobyl?
I haven't started that one yet. I heard that was a good one.
I heard it's good. It's only like 5 episodes though.
Yeah, it's like a brand. It's a new series. It just came out, I believe. Billions, I like Game of Thrones. I just finished. Yeah. So just those two, really.
Game of Thrones. What do you think of the end?
Season 8 was a bit. I thought they, you know, the big scuttlebutt is that they abbreviated it and took shortcuts. at the same time, I kind of get it. Like how long do you want their arcs, these character arcs, to be?
Right.
You know, how so you can develop a character. It was 8 seasons. I mean, like, and the writers were like, it was
the guy. The book wasn't even done. He just said, "Forget it, I'm done."
Yeah,
and they kind of created the rest of it, right?
Yeah. The writers for the show, they read the books that were developed by as an R.R. Martin, I guess, George Martin.
Yeah.
And then they obviously wrote it and adapted it for the television show. But I think they did a fantastic job. I thought season 8 was kind of a cinematic, you know, season. It was all about the visuals.
It was it's kind of been what we'd been waiting for, right? To freaking unleash that damn dragon.
I pretty much, man. I
there might have been some women and children that were hurt in the episode, but
golly, man, it was a
barbecue fest. when he stabbed her, he killed her, and that dragon, you know, you hear that, and then you can just, he flies by and you're like, oh shit.
Oh, I know.
And he came up. I mean, that I felt bad for the dragon.
Totally. And you know, and then he turns around and he starts to heave his flame. He turns his head and melts the Iron Throne. What it got me though was I thought only a Targaryen could fly dragons, right?
Right.
So Jon Snow, Aegon Targaryen, right?
Right.
How come nobody, none of the characters or the plot, the storylines keyed in on that? They are just like, Jon Snow, he can fly a dragon.
Well, and I thought he was also fireproof.
Yeah.
Are all Targaryens fireproof?
I don't think so. I think certain ones are.
Well, there was a couple scenes like in the, not the last episode, but when they fought the dead and the blue dragon, the one that was kind of, you know, blew those flames. I mean, the flames were coming all around him. It wasn't directly on him, but any other mortal would have toasted.
Conceivably. Oh, right, when he was getting pinned against that barricade.
I kept thinking at some point he is going to be like the father of dragons or something.
Right, right.
Like the uncle. Had that,
the nephew of dragons.
His second uncle. But you know, I thought that would have been more.
I thought it would have been obvious to, you know, once he was able to fly on one of Daenerys' dragons, I thought, you know, did anybody else notice that he's flying a dragon?
Right.
No one's like, only Targaryens fly a dragon. You know, he's a bastard. Yeah. I know.
That was the first clue that there was going to be an issue.
Right, you know. So I'm a huge fan. I listen to their podcast, Game of Thrones podcast and stuff. I love the whole navigation of the maze and the personalities. I really thought that show was really well done.
I love that show.
Yeah.
I was sad to see it end. I read somewhere that there was another show that was going to spin off from it that was more
prequels, apparently.
Is that what
There's
it is?
There's prequels coming.
But it's more based on dragon stuff.
Yeah. Well, the prequels are revolving around the Targaryens.
And
leading up to the Mad King's death,
because they've got a lot into that show to just put it all in a warehouse and move on.
It was awesome. I really enjoyed it.
There was a movie. It was just out, and it was about dragons. Dragonfire.
How to Train Your Dragon.
No. Different movie. But I watched the movie, and if you watch it, the dragon that's in that movie, a lot of the AI looked similar to the dragon, Dragon, you know, when he's climbing
right,
and walking.
Right.
So
apparently, and this is one of my staff members at Urban Flow, she's a huge Game of Thrones person and, you know, really into dragons. But apparently the Game of Thrones dragons, they're not real dragons because their wings are their arms. Like real dragons actually have, like, they're four-legged with wings on their back.
Okay.
Something like that. I don't know. She had a name for them.
So that's a fake dragon?
It's a different type of dragon.
Like a bat.
Yeah, bat dragon.
Well, but you're right. It climbs, it walks on its arms.
Yeah, it walks on its wings.
So. Whereas, like, other dragons are, like, almost like a four-legged animal with wings on its
back.
Like
Puff the Magic Dragon.
Right.
Right.
I just did a CBD oil podcast. Should have been here for that. That was pretty good.
Oh, we could do a Game of Thrones podcast. I'd love that, man.
Nothing's more annoying to me than someone that gets all excited that they don't watch Game of Thrones.
That they don't watch it?
They don't. Oh, I must be the only person in the world that's never watched Game of Thrones. Right. And I want to say,
right,
you're an idiot. Because right, it's not only, you know, 8 seasons later, it's a big deal. But when I watched the very first season, because I remember it like it was yesterday, there was a new show coming on called Game of Thrones. And I said,
check it
I'm taking resumes for a new show. And right, I watched it. And that opening scene, I was hooked.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a great show. I didn't just watch it because everybody watched it.
Right.
I watched it from the very beginning to the very end. And
it's like
and
Breaking Bad. Oh, I was the only one who didn't watch Breaking Bad or The Sopranos. Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. What'd you do with yourself? Well, and I had to step out of Breaking Bad for a while because when those two bald-headed twins dudes showed up, remember the crazy Mexican mafia guys, bald-headed? Oh, I was too much anxiety.
Yeah, that was a great show.
I love that show.
Dude,
it was
Breaking
good.
Bad was, I think I might rewatch that one. That was...
Did you like the end on that one?
I thought it was pretty good. Actually, you know, no one likes endings. It's always a big controversy. You know, Sopranos had a controversial ending. I thought it was all, you know, I thought it was all very, very well done. You know, I liked Breaking Bad.
Well, the funny thing about Breaking Bad is I grew up in Albuquerque, and that was shot in New Mexico, Albuquerque.
Right.
And every time I watch it, I'd be like, I know those skies because they're like New Mexico skies. Them hot, tall, blue, white cloud, just open space.
Yeah.
And like when they were out in the middle of the desert, you know, cooking in that camper. I mean, that's the stuff we used to do. That's
there.
Not cooking campers, but we would head out into the fields and just spend out all day on motorcycles out in the mesas and just.
It was really cool. I thought that show was awesome.
Yeah.
There was nothing to me like Sopranos was like up there for me. But when that show came on, I was like, man, this show is the bomb.
Yeah. Sopranos was good too. I liked that.
Oh, totally.
When we went, we had gone to visit Albuquerque, and they still have, you know, missing pictures of, what's his name, White.
Oh. Walter White.
Walter White.
Heisenberg.
Missing. You know, they're still in the windows.
Like, he's still alive.
They're still living it down there.
Oh, man, Jesse, what a character.
Oh, my God. That.
Oh, my gosh.
That was a good show.
And then when Pollos Hermanos, the owner, or the Mexican mafia guy came out with his half face after it was blown off.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Yeah.
What just happened? You know, he's like straightened up at his neck. And
well, you remember that car wash?
Yeah.
We used to go through that car wash. That car wash is on Central Avenue, and it used to be called Octopus Car Wash.
No kidding.
And it was this huge building, tall building. Yeah, I know exactly where it was, Central Avenue.
He was laundering money through it, right?
Yeah, and we used to go to that car wash. So that almost made it even a little bit more personal.
No kidding. Yeah, that makes it very real, man.
Yeah, well, I remember as a little kid because we used to go to Octopus Car Wash and then our mom would take us to Arby's next door.
Right.
As a, you know, I'm like 8, 9, 10-year-old little kid, so.
Pollos Hermanos.
I love Arby's. What does that mean?
That was the fast food chicken place.
Oh,
in
right.
Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah, right. Yeah.
Pollos Hermanos. Yeah. Yes. He was like serving chicken. The drug lord, you know, was like.
Yeah, that was a funny. I forgot about that. Real calm guy.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy that didn't.
Half his face blew off in that one scene. Like, you know, he was sitting in a chair and the guy, it was some. Oh, he was hardcore. Remember, he like swallowed that poison and tried to kill that, you know, the other cartel, drug cartel. And oh man,
well, like I said, I had to step away from a bit because it I don't know, for some reason I get anxiety on certain things and I just
a little too heavy, kind
of a little too heavy. I had to step away, but I did watch. I think the last 2 seasons. Was it 6 seasons of that?
Did you finish it?
I did.
Okay,
But I didn't watch when those two bald Mexican guys showed up. And they were, you know, between those two guys and then his brother-in-law trying to figure out if he was the guy.
Right.
I couldn't take it anymore. I was like, I can't take this. It's too much.
Oh, my God. I got a support group for that one.
I got to take a nap.
I remember being exhausted. I felt that way with Game of Thrones, too. It's like, you know, just real exhausted because there was like 20 storylines. You know, and you had to keep track of all of them. Like, okay, where is that one from? Like, how did that happen?
My only complaint with Game of Thrones is I felt like as, like, season 5 is really a great example of that. I felt like the budget was just not there Because it, you know, they'd travel across the desert and they'd come across a tent with three people in it.
Right.
Right. Where's the troops? You know?
I mean, 1 through 6, I felt was very much just dialogue.
Yeah.
Very much. Some obviously the Battle of the Bastards and Blackwater and all the different battles were pretty cool, but it was much more about the character development. You know, 7 and 8, then it was like cinematic. Like,
yeah.
Just, well, you know.
7 was amazing. That when they finally fought that dragon came creeping across the land, and I just, oh.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
The ice dragon.
Yes. Well, that was, and then, you know, I also was like, how come they're fighting the dead already in like season 2? I mean, this is the final battle, I thought. Right. This is it. This is what we've been waiting for, the dead.
Right.
And then they killed him, and then I'm like, now what? And then I forgot about Cersei is over there in that castle.
Oh,
waiting.
My gosh. How evil is she?
She was evil. Well,
golly, man.
She got scared in the end. She was frightened.
Man, she should. I know, but even then, like, even to the very end, she just was convinced that she was going to be fine.
Yeah.
Like, it was wild going through that psychological, you know, dilemma. She was like, she still thinks she's going to make it.
Yeah.
Like,
she was confused.
She's been so unbeatable for the first, you know, eight seasons.
Well, she actually spent some time in jail.
Right.
That was a little bit of a humbling moment.
Shame.
I did not like that guy. I did not like those guys. Yeah, I did not like those guys that had the things on their forehead.
Creepy.
I did not like that.
Creepy.
Yeah, that was not good. I'm excited about trying Chernobyl. My wife has no interest in it, so I don't know how I'm going to watch it, but I do want to watch it.
Yeah, my family, my brother-in-law, and some of my family members are big fans of Chernobyl. I haven't started it yet. I heard it's intense.
We watched something last night on Netflix called I Am Mother.
Mm.
That was good.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I thought. I mean, it was intense, but it was a great movie, and I think that was directed by Netflix, or created by Netflix. That's the other thing, YouTube, Netflix.
Hulu,
they're creating their own content, right. And it's good.
Yeah, totally. Another good, I got a recommendation for you. Sons of Anarchy is a good one.
Yeah, I watched that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Burned out of it, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was a little, I don't know.
A little over the top. You find it, at the very end with his motorcycle, you know.
Well, and that's like Vikings. Do you watch Vikings?
I haven't seen that one yet. Is that a good one?
Mm.
No?
I don't know. I get tired of these strapping muscular guys with these braided ponytails and swinging swords and stuff. Yeah,
they're all pretty built up in Game of Thrones. They're all real fit. I'm like, man, why are these guys lifting weights?
Yeah,
you know,
right. When did they get all chiseled and oiled?
Is there CrossFit in Game of Thrones?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'll be down to CrossFit in the temple.
I know. Like, what? How do these guys get all ripped and huge and
the mountain? You remember the mountain?
Oh my God!
Have you ever seen his wife?
Uh-uh.
She's like 4 foot.
Right.
She's like this teeny little.
You know, apparently he's the world's strongest man.
Yeah, We just saw him. I just saw that competition.
But yeah. Is he in it?
Yeah. He won it.
Gigantic, is he?
He's huge.
Yeah.
Well, he's a Swede or a Norwegian or.
Yeah. He's a Viking.
I was lucky enough to go to Norway. My son is Norwegian.
Oh,
and,
wow.
We went to visit his mother's grandparents, and her grandfather was like 90 years old. And the first thing you notice when you go to a country like that is that it's all covered with rocks.
Mm.
And then you come apart where there's no rocks, but there's walls.
Right.
So they literally, and he did this too, and he showed us how he did it. He was at 90 years old, still moving rocks around with levers and pulleys. But, you know, they take all these rocks and then they build a wall around the land.
Right.
It was crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
And these aren't little rocks.
Norway.
Yeah. Norway is beautiful. I'd live in Norway.
Yeah? That's near Amsterdam. Or, you know, it's near...
I don't know what it's near. We went to Stavanger, not Oslo.
Netherlands. Yeah, I think it's all in that same part of the
region.
But
it was beautiful. Europe. Beautiful land. I mean, but a little cold.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny because you go there and everybody's walking around. You know, the babies are just bundled up in the strollers.
Everybody's tall and blonde, are they?
Yeah. Not tall, but blonde.
That's what the Netherlands was like when I was in Amsterdam for GoPro. Everybody was like over 6'2", 6'3", 6'5", looking around. They're all blonde, blue-eyed.
Yeah, and they're ready to put on armor and fight.
Yeah. It's like, holy crap.
Well, and that's, you know, it's for a different podcast. But, you know, people, you know, marijuana is a big issue right now, but you know, I think the biggest threat to this country really is sugar and lack of exercise. Yep. You know, if there was ever like a civil war or something, half the people couldn't put the musket on the fence.
Yeah, they'd die on the way up the stairs.
They're coming, run.
Yeah.
How about briskly walk with pumping my arms?
right. No, it is all. It's definitely, an issue in this country for sure.
Yeah. Well, I reached out to our state representative to see if he'd come on my podcast.
He may.
He said, I think they will, but a lot of people have been asking me, you know, I represent Steve and I just wanted to ask a few questions. Like, I'm not going to sneak attack the guy.
Right.
He actually rented my house. Right. He actually lived in my house for a year when I moved to over to Easton. He rented it for a year.
I think our local reps would do it. I mean, it was just a casual conversation. I'm not going to hit you over the head with, you know, if you want abortion, go, you know, like.
How about legalizing marijuana? What do you think? Right. I'm not into it. If you're eating at Dolly's, it's nice.
Right, exactly. Where do you get your oil changed?
What's your favorite pizza? Well, that's the premise of the podcast, is just keeping it casual. So you are we gonna still do a Pearl Jam podcast?
We'd love to. We can do that all day long.
How do we do it? Because we did one. But
I think we just put together some topics, you know, just build an agenda and just do something different around it. You
know? I don't know if I told you, but I went to Brooklyn and took my son to see 21 Pilots.
How was it?
I didn't go to the show. I'm Disney Dad, and I sat out and waited while my son and wife went to
get out. You know, we're out by the exit.
That's funny because I was standing by the exit, and I felt so old. I'm like, I felt like my T-shirt was frumpy. I felt like just this old guy waiting for my kid, and I was trying to lean on the wall, and I couldn't get a cool pose. And I was like, oh, forget it, whatever. I'm just an old dad waiting for his kid. But, you know, what was my point about all that? Oh, on the way back, we were listening to Pearl Jam Radio, mm-hmm. and they played that concert from, and I told you that I went to the show, but I think it was the October show.
Spectrum?
Yeah, at the Spectrum. Yeah. No, Spectrum was gone. This was at the
Wells Fargo Center?
Yeah, Wells Fargo. Mm-hmm. And, oh my God, it was just such a great concert. And I almost got a little teary-eyed.
Yeah.
You know,
they haven't been around in a while.
They haven't.
That's the thing. They haven't been around in a while. But we can break it up into, like, you know, 92 to 98 Pearl Jam. Okay. 99 to 2002.
I even thought of, like, doing, like, a two-song. Like, you come in and we'll just listen to two favorite versions of a song.
Yeah.
You know.
That's a great idea. Or talk about a show.
What's up in Pennsylvania? State College? Mm-hmm. There's a State College show on CD, and there's a version of Crazy Mary mm-hmm. from State College that just...
I was at that show.
That was mm-hmm. between, like, you know, the guy, what's the guy that plays keyboard? Yeah, Boom Gaspard. Yeah, Boom Gaspard and Mike McCready. And it's
they're
just
riffing back and forth.
Just, so maybe that might be an idea, is just pick a couple songs and just.
In a road.
Yeah, exactly.
Old car, paper shack.
Exactly. Sing it, brother. Sing it out for you.
On the wrong side of the town.
On the wrong side of the tracks. All right, we won't do that again.
I did that for my son because he hates it when I sing.
Yeah.
You sound nothing like him, Dad.
My son's probably cringing in the corner right now. But that might be an idea. I just don't, you know, I want to do it. I'm afraid we'll end up just like bullshitting and not really getting anything done.
Just focus on it if you want to. I want to
find out if we can play music on this podcast.
Yeah, we could do that.
I might work on that and figure out how I can stream the music into the audio of the podcast.
I think actually Pearl Jam's pretty like... good about licensing. Like I have a lot of Pearl Jam on my channel, YouTube channel,
mm-hmm.
and YouTube will send me an email saying, hey, you know, but they don't take the video down. Like I've used other music, mm-hmm. like Foo Fighters or other bands, and the video goes offline right away.
Yeah, this video is not able to be seen in this region something.
But Pearl Jam, I never had an issue with them. Like they always, it seems to me they're fine with it. Feels like it at least. I'm not monetizing anything. So. Right.
Well, that's where I think it, you know, and I don't monetize this.
Right. Right.
Well, we don't put this on YouTube anyway, but I don't know if there's copyright things when you post. I know like iTunes, when I post a podcast to iTunes, it's like 4 or 5 days before they approve it.
Oh, they do a review and all that.
They review it. So, I guess we could try it and see what happens. I mean, but I do think That would be if we could stream some music in, and
maybe pick just a handful of songs that we talk about. That would be fun.
Yeah, and then maybe we can bring someone in, and you know, if we're doing a podcast and we just invite people that love Pearl Jam to come and set with us, because we have three microphones.
That'll be awesome.
So we could maybe bring in.
What does Yellow Ledbetter mean to you, Tom?
Confusion.
Right.
What is he saying? Well, what does Pearl Jam mean?
Right, right.
I was thinking about that. Yeah. I know it was one of their grandmother's jam, but...
Well, I think that's a joke, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I believe that's what he said in that Pearl Jam 20 movie. So that's something about it, because he touts that he's part Native American. So...
It's funny, because they played a local bar in San Diego, and I can't think of the name right now, but Bacchanal, the Bacchanal in San Diego. They played there. And I used to go to the Bacchanal all the time. I saw Faith No More at the Bacchanal. I didn't know anything about Pearl Jam at the time. So, like, all the opportunities I could have seen them, like, locally in San Diego and in these small clubs, they weren't really popular.
91, 90. Yeah. 91, I think, is when they got together.
And I think I started liking them, like, 93.
Right.
And so I missed all those great opportunities, which is a shame, but because I was right there.
So you started liking them when Versus came out?
No, I started liking them when 10 came out.
So that was 92. So you definitely came in 92 then.
Well, but I think 10 had come out, and I don't, you know, it didn't come out and I became a fan the next day. You know, they had to play some radio stuff. Right. I mean,
it got mainstream in 92. I think they released it in 91, but it got mainstream in like February of 92, and they did the Unplugged session that year. And that's when I just...
Oh, that was good. When he was writing on his arm.
Awesome. Yeah, pro choice.
Well, that was one of my favorite songs, Porch.
Yeah, me too.
I love that song.
Yeah, it's a great song.
I always hated when they changed the intro.
Yeah, I know.
Well, that's Eddie slow version.
When he picks up the guitar. Oh,
God, here we go. I'm surprised you don't like that.
Bathroom break. Who wants a beer?
I'm surprised because I never found Eddie Vedder to be a bad guitar player.
No, it's not that he's not a bad guitar player. It's just that they already have two really good guitar players.
Well, and you know, you mentioned that. You know, Mike McCready he's always been okay.
Yeah.
But it's not. It seems like he's really gotten good over the last years. But in the beginning, I mean, he was okay. He wasn't Eddie Van Halen, or he wasn't.
Yeah,
you know.
He could play that stuff. I actually think early on he was a bit more technical and he was more thoughtful when he wrote the music, and he was more true to the song. I think today, as a guitar player myself, like when I see him on stage, I'm like, okay, he's just playing in scale and just riffing and just improvising. You know, kind of not that he's. I'm not calling him lazy or anything like that, but I just think he's definitely improvising off the cuff a lot more now than.
What was the band that had Layne Staley, and I think it had maybe Mike McCready?
Mudhoney.
Mudhoney.
I know you're talking about. I just heard Mad Season.
Mad Season.
Yeah.
That was a great band. There's a on YouTube, there's a concert that they played, I think, in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Live show at one of those little shows.
Yeah, and Mike McCready's in that band, Layne Staley.
But that was a real... technical, you know, they had those hits, but there were some real technical quiet times in that show where hold on a second, let me just anyway, so there was like some real that show is great. I mean, that band, and I think a couple of those guys overdosed and died.
Yeah, I mean, Layne is gone.
Well, Layne, but I think like that guys. That drummer might have even died,
right?
But that was a great band. So, maybe you're right. Maybe they were a little more technical early days.
I mean, Mike is definitely, you know, he comes from the Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jimi Hendrix, you know, cookie cutter. And I think he is a great guitar player. My personal opinion is that he's taken the easy road in the live shows, quite frankly, and just plays and improvises a lot. Like, Even Flow is 1,000 miles per hour now.
Yeah.
You know, and the solos are barely in key, and he's going against the rhythm. So for me, I'm like, it's a great song, you know, slow it down, make it heavy again, you know.
Well, and I'm sure some of that comes from just playing over and
they're over 50. It's like, you know, and they're like, listen, they're not the same band as when they were 27 and 28 years old. You know, I get that part of it as well. So I'm kind of holding on to the past sometimes.
I wonder if they'll come out with another record.
Supposed to. I mean, that's you know, that's what I've read online.
I just saw on Instagram the Eddie Vedder solo poster.
Yeah. Yep. There he's touring with The Who in the UK.
And I don't even understand that because. So what, he's replacing Roger Daltrey? Because I saw.
No, I think he's just opening for The Who. I
thought you meant he was like singing for The Who.
No, I think he's opening. Like he comes out with his guitars and he's just opening, sits on a chair and he plays all his songs plus some Pearl Jam stuff.
That's a little risky by The Who.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess it fills the show early.
Yeah. And you know, Pearl Jam opened for The Stones on one of their tours too, I believe. You know, but yeah, Eddie, you know.
I remember seeing going to a Pearl Jam and he came out mm-hmm. before the show.
Mm.
And, you know, all the people that were there early.
Yeah, I got the little.
Yeah, I got a little set down of a couple songs.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
That's always pretty cool. All right, brother. Well.
This is fun. Thank you.
Yep. I love doing this. And I tell you what, and what I'm learning with podcasting is, you know, you need content.
Absolutely.
And absolutely. I, you know, you're going to be one of my go-to guys when I, like, we'll bring you
I'll
in.
I'll give you some ideas, man.
Yeah, because I love doing the podcast, and I want to be consistent, and I'm trying to do a few.
I think it's great that you're bringing in local business owners. And I think that's absolutely stellar.
Yeah.
You know, so the grassroots approach.
Yep. Positive. Yeah, and awesome. You know what? I'm not a super smart guy. You know, I'm neutral. You know, I'm not super smart, and I'm not dumb.
Right.
But I like talking about neutral things.
Sure.
And I, you know, I had this a girl on the other day from, she was promoting this Spezzato wine, and she was awesome. I love Karen, but not very educated in wine. So I afterwards, I felt like I maybe let her down a little bit. Like I just, it was fine. I posted it. It's up. It's gone. It's done. But, you know, I kind of started going down that rabbit hole. Like, oh my God, like, should I be really educated in every person that comes? But the reality is I help people come on and teach me.
Right.
And make me a little smarter.
Right.
But, you know, it is what it is. But we're having fun.
Yeah, I think it's great. Come to Over and Float, too. We get that $79.
We're going
to
do that.
You know, $79 Father's Day special. It's only going to be on for 6 more days until that special goes away.
Well, and we could have talked about some Urban Float if you want, but I it looks like you guys are doing great over there.
I mean, it's been awesome.
I hear a lot of feedback and people, you know, and I think some people learned some stuff from the podcast that we did.
Yeah, that's the one feedback that I did get, that it was cool for Maxine and I to talk about what floating is and how to do it, and because it's not as obvious as it looks sometimes, it's not that obvious.
Well, and as obvious as it is, it also leaves a lot of opportunity for people to make it less obvious, you
right.
know, like create a lot more difficulty in just floating and you
being
know,
with yourself
yeah,
in
exactly.
a quiet environment.
So you did get some feedback from it.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, a lot of people got back to us saying, you know, it was so cool to hear about the process of floating and the business idea and what it does for people. And that's the big challenge for for this particular business, because, you know, Spezzato Vineyards and all these other businesses, pretty obvious what they do.
Right. Exactly.
It's not that obvious for Urban Float. Oh, what? It's an ice cream store, you know? So, floating already is such a new and progressive and kind of an edgy alternative healing thing. So thank you for that. That was huge.
My pleasure, man. And honestly, that I guess because we're getting older, you know, I want to feel good.
Yeah.
I want to feel...
I had a great float last night. I floated, my wife, Amy and I floated last night, a great float. Felt like 10 minutes I was in there.
Well, we're going to do it for Father's Day because
good.
I deserve it.
Grab the special, $79, 2 float package.
And that's going to be on for another 6 days?
It's till the father, it ends at midnight Father's Day. So you can get... People are coming in buying like multiple of it because it saves you $5 per float.
Yeah, and you also still have the membership.
Right.
And the membership is you know, because I think people go, well, how am I going to spend this much, you know? But the fact is that you
if
offer
you
a great...
It,
right,
yeah.
If you offer a great membership for people that, you know, especially like, you know, older folks and stuff.
Yeah, a lot of older folks floating almost every day.
Yeah, that's
almost
awesome.
Every day.
And you know what? I learned something from the podcast as well, because when we started the podcast, I thought, I do think it should be a little warmer, you know, because I just want to float in a hot bath.
Mm-hmm.
But Maxine did a great, she explained that really well, is that air temperature, and if you're floating in something too warm, you're going to be able to tell the difference between the air and the
right.
water.
Right.
And you kind of...
It's a neutral experience.
Yeah.
It's got to be like to your intelligence level, right in the middle.
That's right.
Not high, not low.
Neutral.
Right? No, neutral.
But it made sense after she's, I was like, oh, now I get it. And I tried to explain that to somebody and they're like,
you'll have a better float that way. You'll have a better float because you're not, you know, whole purpose is not feel anything.
Well, and I think if it's warmer, it is just that floating. Whereas if you have that balance between air and water, you're not really floating. You're just there.
You're like, well, yeah, yes. I mean, you can look at it that way too.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're obviously floating. I mean, I'm not, you're floating, but I'm
it's
saying
like you are there. You're right.
But
it's
if the lower half of your body is warmer and the upper half is cooler, then you feel you're floating.
Right.
Whereas if they're both the same, you lose that.
It's weightlessness.
That's right.
It's weightlessness.
That's right. That was smart, Tom. All right, brother. Well, hey, right, thank you. Thanks so for much. Taking some time. And we will be back with you another day.
Thanks,
brother.
Bud.
All right, bye.